everybody. I'm Dave Sandell.
And I'm Caleb Gardner.
This is the Best Album For podcast, a podcast about the best album for going home again. Caleb, I have a fresh glass of bourbon, so I'm ready for this experiment.
I was like, is that what this topic brings up for you? Is
drinking heavily.
Seriously.
I am in my hometown. I'm here because my dad passed away a year ago, and today is his birthday. And so he passed away just a few days before what would have been his birthday. And I'm here just to kind of be with my mom and be with my brother and kind of feel the things that come up on these types of anniversaries. Yeah. I'm in an Airbnb. I'm just down the street from where the house I grew up in, which is not the house that my mom lives in now, but also is near where my mom lives now because they moved like two blocks away. And down the street from my high school, I have been driving around. I've been visiting with old friends. I am in the place where all the stories that I tell about my childhood, where all of that shit happened. And I thought it'd be really interesting to talk about, you know, there's this old saying, you can't go home again, which is kind of generally understood to mean that even if you return to the place of your youth, it won't be the same. That, you know, the people change and the town changes, you change, obviously. But while some things change, some things do remain the same. And home has a way of like kicking us right back to where we were when we were growing up, like for good or ill. Like when I set foot in my hometown, I am immediately like 17 again,
the same
or
15 person, right?
again or something, you know, like, and certainly I think in my parents' eyes, I'm still that person, even though I'm with my kids and everything else. And I think there's just no way around it. I will always enter Burlington and be right back in that place. You know, obviously I get together with, you know, my friends who are here, and you know, we just go down memory lane. You know, it's not all we do, but it's nice to like remember all those things. And, you know, I kind of drive by things and wince a little bit, like, oh, I didn't like the thing that happened in that place. And I drive by something else and it looks different. And that feels bad. It feels bad that like, I'm glad that the rest of the world has moved on, but I'm not glad that my hometown has moved on. Like I wanted to like be like,
you want to be like a time capsule.
Yeah. Like, you know, crystallize an ember a little, or amber a little bit. And, you know, obviously music's a big part of that. And so, you know, when I get back in town, I have all these sense memories that come up, and all of that is kind of encased in music for me. There are hundreds of albums that have like, that I have sense memories, you know, connected to of this town, of this place. And I think that there is some longing inside me that I've expressed many times in this podcast to be able to go back to some of those times and redo them, either to like shake myself and say, what are you doing? Or to be able to like give myself some hints to like avoid it or like sidestep it, or just to experience some of the good things again. Obviously, there's a lot of really good things that are part of that too. And, you know, and I think about, you know, losing my dad was really hard. I really liked my dad. He was a really good man and somebody who I just genuinely liked being around. And there's just all these feelings, obviously, that come up when things are gone, like when they'll never be the same. I keep imagining that I'm going to walk into the house and he'll be there this time, you know, or I'll like call home and expect him to pick up the phone, you know, or I can't tell you the number of times in the last year. I'm sure this happens to everyone. I can't tell you the number of times where I've said, oh, I should call my dad and ask him that. And then I like realize I can't call my dad, and, you know, the tears come a little bit, and it feels really sad. And, you know, like there's this sort of new emotion on top, like layered on top of all those other things of, like my dad's gone, and like, you know, childhood wasn't perfect. Parents aren't perfect. I wasn't a perfect kid. You know, all those things are true. And something else that is true is that I really love him and I really miss him. And it feels hard to come back and not have everything be the same.
Yeah. Definitely brings new definition to can't go home again.
Yeah, absolutely. Like there's no version of this that is now available. And I know this is a little bit different from you, but the general idea I had for this episode was to pick an album that evokes something of our formative years, like ideally something that we've carried with us, you know, from like our childhood till now, so that it contains all the things that are true about who we are now, but still feels like home and feels like childhood. And so today we're going to talk about one of my favorite records of all time. I don't know if the same could be said for you. I'd actually love to hear about your how you understood, you know, how you were processing this topic as I was presenting it, because obviously we had very different childhood experiences and very different relationships with our hometown. what's fascinating is that I was eager to leave my hometown. I'm eager to never return. I don't really want to move back here. I would never be willing to do that. But I was so eager to leave it. And now I have some like nostalgia for it, which is very new. This is actually a new thing in the last
really? 10 years or so. Oh, that's interesting.
This is a beautiful town. Like, it's just a really beautiful like space. They have these amazing parks. It's on the river. There are all these bluffs. It's just a really beautiful place. And also it's not all beautiful. There's a lot of stuff here that is a bummer for a lack of a better word. But Caleb, when I threw this out to you, like picking the best album for going home again, what came up for you?
I mean, I think similarly, I was, you know, I was anxious to get out of my hometown. I have mixed feelings about going back. Like, obviously my family's there. I love my family. Want to see them. And I definitely like, there's just a nostalgia about like, oh, that's my high school. Oh, this street hasn't changed. Oh, this street has changed. You know, like that's a fun like game to play when you're back. I think the most recent time I was back was my nephew was born, and I went back to meet my new nephew. My sister still lives just outside my hometown, so she's still close to my parents. And so, you know, I did spend some time just kind of driving around the city, seeing what was new. I think my city is a little bigger than yours. We had three high schools. We were adjacent to a military base, so a lot of the experience is kind of driven by the military there. We weren't in a military family. We were just kind of adjacent to it. But I don't think it had a lot of the natural beauty in the city itself. I do think that outside of it, like we grew up next to a wildlife refuge. And now that's kind of special to me, like going back and trying to find kind of a portion that I wish I'd taken more advantage of. I think it's probably that, where we had this like wilderness refuge with buffalo and some really cool like wild animals right next to us. I kind of wish I had explored that a little more. But in terms of my hometown, just kind of like culturally very dependent on the military, very dependent on a few specific industries, very working class, in a way that, again, I kind of rubbed up against very early on in terms of my priorities in life, wanting to get an education, wanting to kind of like go on to do bigger things. So I think coming home again for me definitely has those mixed feelings about bringing up that same, to your point about being right back in the shoes of a 17-year-old, right? Like bringing up those same like, oh, anxious to get out of here and get back to this life that I have now that I really love. I think if I was going back to like talk to 17-year-old Caleb, I'd probably do that. Be like, hey, you made it. You know, like, look at this life you've got. Like, you're all these like things that you were fantasizing about, because that's what you do when you're like a teenager wanting to get out of your hometown. Like, they happened. It's great.
Have you found yourself softening at all to like, I was certainly very cynical about my hometown and very maybe a little angry about my hometown for a really long time. And this sort of experience of reconsidering it is pretty new. Have you found yourself at all like softening to some of those childhood memories, experiences, or the things that were true about your town? Or is it all just still kind of icky, for lack of better terms?
I think that I've softened toward people. You know, like when you get older, especially your parents, when you start to see your parents as actual people, it's a like, very weird experience, you know? Yeah. You know, like all of a sudden they're not your parents. They're just like adults who are trying to do their best. And you're like, whoa.
It's wild considering like, oh, you were this age? Like the age I am now. You were this age when that was happening? Like,
yeah, right, so, right.
Like this thing that I'm so mad about, you were in your 30s? Like what? How would you have done it any differently?
Yeah. My mom was 19 when she had me.
Oh, okay.
Which by the way is Oklahoma late. Just kidding. It's not. They have kids young, but not quite that young. So
I remember had kids very young.
I did, but not that young. That's what I'm saying. That's true. But I remember when I was in college when I was 19, and I remember going, holy shit, my mom had a baby right now. I have no idea what I'm doing with my life, you know? So like there's moments like that where you definitely like have a new renewed appreciation for your parents, who they are, what they went through, their faults and limitations, but also their strengths as people. And like you see them in kind of a new appreciative light. I think I've thought that about people I grew up with, about people who were role models that I like definitely rebelled against. And then later in life were like, oh, I mean, they were okay.
Yeah.
But it's hard to think about that collectively in a cultural environment.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've quite gotten there for the like collective environment that like brings a lot of that brokenness together, if that makes
There's
sense.
A little bit of that going on here for sure. Like the environment, I would not fit in here today for sure.
Yeah.
Like I would not feel like myself here, or like I could be myself here. And so obviously that's all still true and hasn't really changed. I have found it interesting. I had a little bubble, you know, cause I was at a Catholic school growing up. You know, there was a big high school in town and then there was our little Catholic high school. And my like friend groups were largely like the people who were at that school, the people that I knew were at that school. And, you know, maybe the people that I worked with, I worked at a grocery store for a number of years and, you know, maybe some people there, but for the most part, I was in this little bubble and I just expected that every time I came back to town, I would run into like 1,000 people that I know. And that's, it's almost never true. It's almost never true that I run into somebody that I recognize or know. And that feels both like good, like it's good that that doesn't happen. I don't necessarily want that to be the experience, but also a little bit like, oh, this town was much bigger than me. I was definitely the center of my own little world while I was living here and, you know, kind of shaped my narrative around what was happening here, you know, to fit the narrative in my head about what was happening to me. There's been this widening of my lens of how I approach it here. Obviously, my dad was the mayor of the town for a stretch.
Oh, wow.
He was very involved in like, you know, civic things. And he had a heart for this community that felt very unique and good. And so I felt like we knew a lot of people. Like he was well known, I guess. But I kind of get the impression that most people didn't know him, or, you know, like most people definitely don't know me. Like they don't know who I am. And that's wild. Cause when I was a kid, it felt like, gosh, everybody knows who I am and everybody knows I'm Johnson Delson and like all these other things, you know, like I couldn't escape that. And now, you know, I come back in and I sort of understand those things on a cognitive level, but still in my heart, I just go right back to the 17-year-old place. My parents moved, you know, maybe like 10 years ago, maybe 10 or 11 years ago, they moved just because they needed to get into a one-story house and they were in this two-story house. And they've like cut down a tree. The new owners of our old house like cut down a tree. Like it just looks a little bit different. I'm like, what have you done? What have you done? This place should be a monument to my, you know, turmoil and my teenage angst. Why have you dared change
it? How dare you?
And that, you know, the whole like they've this is so, who cares? This is such a like, nobody in the audience right now can relate to this, except for I think this is universal. I think the specifics make it universal. Our neighborhood was in this, I don't know how you describe it. It was enclosed. Like it was, there was only one way in, one way out. Like it was a big neighborhood, but there was only one way in, one way out. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's not like a gated community, but if you wanted to enter our neighborhood, you came in through Willow Avenue, and if you want to exit our neighborhood, you left through Willow Avenue. And now they busted out the other end, so it kind of goes towards like a middle school and all these other things.
So your town was one of the quarantine zones on the last list. Yes, continue.
Absolutely. And so I also had this very like, you know, in addition to having this kind of small knit community at school and then, you know, other places, we also had this small knit community within my neighborhood, where it kind of felt like my whole life took place within like a 4-block radius. And my high school was very close, you know. And so, you know, similarly, we've found things in Burlington that I didn't, that's the name of my hometown, that I didn't know existed or that I didn't really care about, I guess, when I was a kid, that our kids like love. Like the nature here is incredible, you know, and there's things that they are, they like long for Iowa. They like constantly want us to move here and constantly want us to like.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Cause you know, there's just so much nature and they love nature. They love that there's, you know, this wide open space where they can run free. And that was not who I was. I wasn't that kid. I did not care about the wide open space where I could run free.
Neither
so seeing it through
I.
their eyes has also changed things a lot too.
It's funny because my youngest is definitely like that. My oldest two are not so much, but my youngest is definitely like very outdoorsy, loves the open outdoors. He is the one that's like, oh God, I wish we could live in the suburbs. You know, like I wish we could live on a farm somewhere or something and just like adventure all the time. And I have to tell the story real quick of when we first saw, so my in-laws bought a pretty sizable property and house in Connecticut that we visit, you know, once a year, and it's got a pool, and we kind of like make it cousin time, you know, it's like cousin camp. We go and we get the kids together and they kind of hang out for a week. First time we went, my son Colt said, "Why do you have a field in your backyard?" Like that's what he called it. It was like so much, he'd never seen so much grass that someone owned. So he called it a field.
Nice. And did you, so some false part of you died inside?
Well, I think it's a lot to maintain. So I was like, yeah, why do they have a field? I was like, I don't want this much grass.
Well, that's fair. That's interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, but yes, I hear that about like kids not really understanding, like at a young age, yes, you're going to want that. But at some point when you get into high school, probably you'll probably like being in the Chicago area, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. I longed for Chicago area when I was, grew up kind of going to Chicago once a month. My mom's parents were from Chicago, and there's sort of this lore in our family that when my dad convinced my mom to move to Burlington, Iowa, where was there, he was from, she said, okay, but we have to go back to Chicago once a month. And we did that. We went back to Chicago once a month. So once 1 weekend a month.
That's a long drive for once a month.
I agree. It's a lot of weekends. I mean, I guess there was like a couple of times a year my Nana would come here instead, but you know, 10 weekends a year we were spending in Chicago. And I just remember like the lights and the city and the radio, you know, like just all the things that we didn't have access to, the food, you know. I wasn't a foodie as a, you know, I was a picky little, you know, 12-year-old or whatever, but just everything felt so elevated and so like amazing. Then we'd come back to Iowa and it felt so small and like trapped and enclosed. And now I see it a little bit differently than I did. Although obviously, you know, you got people listening to this podcast, you guys know that Caleb and I sit on the political, like progressive Democrat side of the fence in a way that wouldn't fit in my hometown. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Spoiler alert. and so that wouldn't necessarily fit in here. It seems at this point, but
there are a lot of
things that I like. There's something I wanted to do today that's a little, maybe a little different than what we normally do. I do want to like kind of geek out about these records. I want to geek out about my record. I don't know about your record. I have feelings about your record. I want to geek out about this record. So I'm actually going to talk about you all know that I maintain these lists. I'm going to talk about my number three album of all time today. And so it feels like a big special episode of like, hey, let me open my heart and tell you why this record has affected me so much. And I guess I want to talk a little bit about the music itself and how awesome it is. But I also want to kind of track a journey. I don't know if this is the exact thing that will happen, but I have in my head that I want to track a little bit what this meant to me when I first heard it in 1993 and what it meant to me kind of throughout high school and college. I went to college in a different town, but still in Iowa. And have all sorts of things. We haven't even begun to mine college yet.
Seriously.
But we will soon. I have all these different experiences with this album. Then I took this album obviously with me into my adulthood and, you know, into getting married and into, you know, beginning therapy and into different jobs and to being a pastor for over a decade. Like this album has just consistently been a part of my life for 30 years. Like it was released in 93. So for 30 years, this has been a part of my life, which feels insane. It feels like, how could I be that old? Number one. And how could this record be that old and still sound like so compelling to me? And it has, my like experience of it has changed, and the way that I interact with it has changed a lot over that time. So I want to kind of talk through that. So I guess my question is, do you want me to talk about the music first? Or do you want to talk about like the journey of it first?
I feel like you at least got to tell people what the album is. That was such a preamble and tease. Like, yeah, at least tell them what it is, and then you can take either path.
All right. So the album I'm choosing for best album for Going Home Again, and this is one of those episodes where I am not suggesting this is the best album for Going Home Again. This is one of those where I'm going to tell you about my experience of a record so that maybe you can think about what your experience of a record might be too, and kind of go a little deeper on your own with some of the homework that we've done. But my pick for the best album for Going Home Again is the Smashing Pumpkins' Siamese Dream. And and I'm going to cue here and just play like 16 songs. Play like the whole record. Here, I'm going to play 10 clips really quick. This is like this big, earnest, hard on your sleeve record that was kind of completely different than everything else that was happening in the early 90s with, you know, alternative rock or grunge or whatever label you wanted to put on it. There was this like cynicism and sarcasm that I feel like Gen X kids embraced.
Yeah,
and,
totally.
And we're drawn to. And that was happening through all the movies we were watching, all the TV shows we were watching. That was like a common thread through a lot of the musicians we were listening to. Like there was sort of this like disregard for fame or disregard for being cool. Like nobody wanted to actually be famous and had a lot of judgment about anyone who was. Any band that ever got popular was immediately labeled a sellout. And I have lots of feelings about that now. I feel... I have a lot of things I want to say about that at some point on this show, but Siamese Dream is this big earnest rock record that's kind of born out of this weird marriage of like Boston, like More Than a Feeling Boston and My Bloody Valentine, like shoegaze My Bloody Valentine. I mean, it's like kind of got this prog rock 70s classic radio riffs thing going on. Like you could put on a Zeppelin album or a Pink Floyd album and it would sit nicely alongside of Siamese Dream, because Billy Corgan, the you know, the singer songwriter here, was just fully embracing like big arena ready riffs and big, huge sound. He just wanted it to sound louder and more full and more, you know, cacophonous and cathartic, and his lyrics were like kind of nonsense but also like really specific and gorgeous because you could just project yourself onto all of them because they had so little meaning. But he was so emotive and so plaintive. Like he was so I mean, I keep saying earnest. He was so earnest the way that he presented his emotions for everybody to consume. There's this thing that happens like in shoegaze music, which this is heavily inspired by My Bloody Valentine. Bob Mulder, who worked on Loveless by My Bloody Valentine, also was the engineer on Smashing Pumpkins' Siamese Dream, and that was on purpose. And so there's this thing that happens in shoegaze. It's called shoegaze because the idea is the musicians are so concerned with the music they're playing, they're barely making eye contact with the audience. Like their whole reason for being is to stand on stage and strum their instruments and like make a wall of sound. And Smashing Pumpkins dared to like look people in the eye. Like they made that music, but they were like looking people in the eye and like aiming for feelings and vibes that evoked like teenage angst in real time. They like would lock, this is how I'm thinking about it metaphorically. I don't think Billy Corgan actually did this, but they would like lock eyes with the person they were singing to, you know, at whatever, at the Metro in Chicago, you know, when they were coming up. And it felt like he really meant all the things he was saying. It is this just incredible record. He is going for it. Like there's this thing I read about this record there that the producer essentially encouraged him to, when he listened to Gish, his vocals are a little more buried in the mix and he rarely is like singing his heart out. He's kind of reserved. He has a super nasally whiny voice.
Yep.
That a lot of
very
people really
distinct
hate.
Voice.
Yeah. And if you hate it, so be it. I get it. But he is like done hiding his voice on this record. And he just is like belting out these power ballads and belting out these huge songs and just like, you know, criticisms of his voice be damned. He's just going to fully go for it. And there's something about that that I love, that I like deeply connect with. And there's like these huge, big ballads like Disarm, you know, and then there's these huge, like adrenaline filled songs like Hummer. There's these little quiet songs like Luna. And this is a very like sequenced album. Like there's a lot of effort and thought put into how one track bleeds into the next. And it's all taken very seriously, and he's a very serious musician, and he's not throwing away any of these things. And there's so much excess, in this music.
Yes.
There's so many more instruments, so much more wall of sound.
I mean, that became like so much more true on, you know, Melancholy, but this is definitely where that sound started. I remember like hearing about when the Smashing Pumpkins were coming up in Chicago music scene in the early 90s, like, they like it was kind of the scene at that time from this documentary I was watching was very kind of tight in terms of the songs, in terms of lyricism, in terms of the layers of sound. Mm-hmm. And they came in and were playing these like 12-minute long shoegazy prog rock kind of songs, and it was just like completely different from the scene at the time.
So many solos, so many guitar solos on this
right
album.
Yeah. But you're right, like Corgan's voice is just like, I remember hearing probably today if I think back, maybe the first Smashing Pumpkins song I remember hearing on the radio.
Yeah, that was kind
and
of
I remember
felt just, like their breakthrough.
Yeah, my first thought was, oh, that guy can't sing. Why would you put, why is he a lead singer? Like, what is this? Who told this guy he can sing? I remember just being like, what's happening?
There's a reason Van Halen doesn't front his own band, you know?
Yeah, right,
there's a
exactly.
reason Robert Plant hires Jimmy Page, or the other way around. Jimmy Page hires Robert Plant.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Of course, I grew to love Smashing Pumpkins, and now they're like one of my favorite, you know, all time bands, and have a lot of nostalgia about Melancholy, especially, I think was probably more of an entry point for me, but Siamese Dream too. I mean, just amazing artistry is kind of how I would categorize them.
I'm basically holding back all my love for Melancholy so that you can pick it for something, and then I can just be crazy on it. I love Melancholy. This is interesting too, because Billy Corgan is like famously fully took over the creation of this album. His James Iha, Darcy Wetzke, they were, I thought it was so cool that like an Asian dude and a woman made up half of the band.
Yeah.
Like when I was a teenager, I thought that was so cool.
It's pretty rare.
And it turns out that they were basically doing nothing. Like they like weren't allowed to play their instruments. Like they would play them live, but they wouldn't play them on the album. All of the instruments on Gish and Siamese Dream are apparently played by Billy, just because he's like a control freak and super anal about getting everything perfect. I read somewhere this for about 2 weeks lessened my enjoyment of Siamese Dream, and then it didn't anymore. I read that he would record, you know, hundreds of takes of every song. And then he and the producer would go through each word and pick the take that word sounded best. And they would create these songs based on like a word from take one, a word from take 200, a word from take seven, a word from take 53. And like this whole record is like held together with scotch tape. Like there's so little of it that was actually recorded live in person. And also it feels like it was fully recorded live in person. Just how could not have been?
I actually think that that's much more common now. Like, I think that, like, I remember seeing I think it was just a YouTube video about Billie Eilish's brother producer that does her work, whose name is Phineas. And he was talking about how they will do that too, like go through and be like, this was the best take, this was the best sound. And like, but if you think about where technology has come and how much easier that is to do now.
yeah, that's true.
Versus in 1992, 1993, that must have been a pain in the ass back then.
So this album is released in the midst of grunge music, which was kind of all about like upending glam rock and upending, you know,
no more hair bands.
No more hair bands. And here comes Billy Corgan in Chicago, not in Seattle, in Chicago. Kind of apparently even shunned from the Chicago scene. Like Urge Overkill was a big band in the Chicago scene, and Smashing Pumpkins were kind of an afterthought and nobody really cared about him. But here he comes and just decides like, no, I also matter. I mean, he like was hanging out with Courtney Love, and he obviously was part of this scene in some meaningful way, but he definitely decided he was going to be a rock star, and he definitely decided they were going to be one of the biggest fans of the world. But I tell you, man, when I hear like the way that he builds these songs up, I think nobody has ever done it better. Like the way that he'll take like kind of that quiet opening and just slowly build and then drop just this huge like avalanche of guitars on it and these massive riffs. And then like these huge long extended solos that let everything kind of become mystical and ethereal. Like you can get lost in some of these songs. There's like on Soma, which 100%. Is like a, kind of a longer song. There's whole stretches where you can just like get into this sort of hypnosis state, just listening to them like play their instruments. And I just eat it up. It is so cool. My favorite song, maybe like my top three favorite songs ever. Favorite song is Mayonnaise, of course. Mayonnaise is like the kind of the heart and soul of this record. It's the kind of the centerpiece, what everything is building to. Song. I don't know any other word to describe it than beautiful. It is plaintive and emotive. This is the like, can anybody hear me? I just want to be me song. I had no idea what he was saying on half of these songs, and there were like no lyrics in the liner notes on the CD that I owned. And so, I just had to try to piece together what he was saying. And to this day, I've read the lyrics so many times and I still like revert back to what I always thought he was saying. And because it had nothing, it was so far away from what he was
actually
saying.
Didn't you hate that? Like that experience of getting an album and then the lyrics not being in the liner notes. And you're like, damn it. I really wanted to know what they were saying.
I want to learn them. Yeah, for sure. But it was kind of cool. Like I kind of felt like I got to be a part of the experience. Like I got to just put myself in. But then he would have these moments where he would drop some truth. That can anybody hear me? I just want to be me moment is, I felt that deep in my soul. Like I remember driving around town with my windows down and blaring this music so loud that it would probably hurt my ears. Like it probably gave me some level of permanent sound damage, hearing damage, because it was so loud. And I feel like that is the right volume for this album. This album demands to be played as loud as you're willing to play it. And it rewards you for playing it as loud as you're willing to play, because there's so much buried in the mix and there's so many things happening. But I just remember like when he gets to that moment, having this cathartic experience of like, yes, me too, that's also how I feel. And I was this little serious kid. Like I was a very serious kid. I took things very seriously. I was thinking about things on a depth that I think was probably a little unhealthy, and like processing emotions on a level that I wouldn't necessarily want for my kids. And when I got to that moment of like, can anybody hear me? I just want to be me. Or just burst to life, like driving around town, listening to that. And I'll take that kind of just for a minute here, like just kind of track it, because I don't want to talk about this for an hour. But I take that song with me, you know, through all of those subsequent experiences. And I know what that song meant to me in 1993 in my room on my stereo. I know what that album meant to me, like, you know, listening to Geek USA and listening to Hummer and Cherub Rock, like those songs, like, brought me to life and made me feel so like enveloped in their sound, kind of like a cocooned in their sound. And I felt like there was some part of me was being imprinted with that sound. And, you know, all through high school, you know, where I was so angsty and so longing and so like just heartachy for whatever silly things I thought were important. And then, you know, all through college, where things were very different. Like my college experience was very different from my high school experience. A lot of the things that I wished had happened in high school did happen in college. And it was a very different experience. And I still felt completely alone. And I still felt completely unseen, even though I was like so at the center of everything had found a way in to crowds that I had always felt like I wanted to be a part of. I felt so alone in that space, and listening to Smashing Pumpkins, like it just like I was compartmentalizing my like pain a little bit and the like turmoil that I was going through. And I would listen to Siamese Dream and it would just bring it all up to the surface, to the point where I sometimes would stop listening to it. Like sometimes I would just turn on something else instead. And then, you know, as I left college, I spent a little bit of time, I moved to Chicago and I spent a little bit of time, essentially on my own, like no friends. I had some people that I worked with who I was getting to know, but I essentially had no friends. I was in this city that I thought I knew really well, but it turns out you need money to do the things that, yes, you know, right, that I thought were so amazing about Chicago when I was a kid, and I didn't have any money. And so I was largely just sitting in my apartment being lonely and being like kind of scared, like, oh my gosh, what have I done? Like, I should probably go back to Iowa. This is really not good. And I remember listening to Siamese Dream at that point and still feeling comforted by it, but kind of in a new way where I was kind of shedding, you know, I was older. I was shedding the angsty part of it. And I was actually just feeling the like core emotions of it. And it's weird because Billy Corgan wrote this when he was probably like in his early 20s. And he will always therefore be in his early 20s on this record.
Right.
But in my head, he just sounds my age.
Yep.
Like when I was a teenager, he sounded like a teenager. When I was in my 20s, he sounded like in 20s. I'm in my 40s now and he sounds like he's in his 40s. I just like, it's like Mona Lisa's like eyes. Like they just stay with me.
Do you think that's partly because the lyrics are just like so absurd that you can kind of read in whatever like age you're? I feel like, so my experience of Corgan songwriting is like in the midst of kind of an absurd theme, like an overall song theme, you can find these nuggets of wisdom that, but it's like in phrase form, right? Like he has these beautiful phrases stuck in this ridiculous song, but then you hear that phrase and you're like, oh my God, that was beautiful. Like take in it, like despite all my rage, I'm still just a rat in a cage is a wonderful turn of phrase that captures a very specific emotion. You know what I mean? And the rest of the song doesn't need to make sense for that to be true, right?
Yeah, for sure. Like there's so many times on Melancholy, especially where he gets that. There's a song called Muzzle. We're gonna get into Sammy's Dream or Melancholy a little bit right now. I feel extraordinary, blessed and cursed in one.
Yes.
And that's a like I fear that I'm ordinary just like everyone. Like that those lyrics like are kind of, you know, back to the Enneagram 4. Like those lyrics kind of define my like inner longing of I'm scared that I'm ordinary and I long to be extraordinary.
It's funny that you bring up that one because I remember specifically like doing this doodling of like Smashing Pumpkins lyrics. And that song and that, like, I fear that I'm ordinary really struck me, you know, like, I think I still have that, like, as a deep fear, you know?
Yeah.
It's universal.
100%. So, you know, I took this album with me then into when I began, you know, I got married. My wife is awesome. I'm so, like, deeply in love with her and I love my marriage. And also marriage brought out all the things about myself that I like had not been paying attention to. Like it just brought to the surface, like, hey, now you're damaging somebody with all your BS, like with all your stuff, your, you know, trauma or whatever else. And so, you know, for a long time I was in therapy and I still am, but for a long time I was in therapy and uncovering like deep truths about myself and like experiences and thoughts and feelings that I kind of buried for a long time. And, all through it. I mean, there were other albums too. I don't want to make it sound like Siamese Dream is the only soundtrack. There are, again, hundreds that could go here, but this was one of them that I would like drive home from therapy sessions and like blare Mayonnaise or blare, you know, Soma or, you know, something else from the record, Disarm, you know, like this like longing, plainful, you know, power ballad. And I would bring up these new things, which was kind of like this hope that's in the music. Like this music is not, it's not grungy. Like I associate grunge music with kind of like sludgy and dark.
Yeah.
And
like a little bit nihilistic.
A little bit nihilistic. And I love that music. I love Soundgarden. I love Alice in Chains. I love Pearl Jam. I don't think Nirvana belongs in that category, but I love Nirvana. Like I think that something else that Siamese Dream does and the Smashing Pumpkins do really well is that their music has this kind of like, this kind of hopeful quality that I really, you know, obviously am really drawn to in music. There's sort of this like music box thing that I experienced with Siamese Dream and with a lot of their music where you could probably boil these melodies down and make them sound really nice on like a tinkly little music box or, you know, a minuet piano or something like that. And there's like this beautiful, lovely, quality to all of their songs that feels 90% of their songs, that feels like there's a lot of hope in that longing, and a lot of like, hey, we're going to, there's, you know, there's not only catharsis, but there's also breakthrough and there's also redemption. And, you know, and as I was, you know, as my faith was deepening and as I was discovering what that meant for me and more, maybe more importantly, what it didn't mean for me, what I was shedding off and what I decided to hold on to instead, Siamese Dream is a part of that. Like I found that record, you know, so, so hopeful and extraordinary, and at some point just so loud and wonderful, you know, like I would walk around, I would go on walks at night and blare it, and it sounded so good. It sounds really good in like October. Like it just is a really great album with headphones on when you're walking around in the dark in October.
I believe that.
So, you know, all these things are true. And then I come back to Burlington and I bring Siamese Dream with me, you know. Obviously, I'm like bringing my iPhone. I'm not talking about like carrying the record along or something like that. But in my heart, I bring Siamese Dream with me. It's an album that I might play when I'm here. And I play it now and I feel all of those things. And I cannot believe one thing that I love about music. And one of the reasons I wanted to start this podcast and have these conversations is because this song that Billy Corgan wrote and this album that Billy Corgan wrote and that all these people played on, I mean, you talked about Jimmy Chamberlain, this amazing drummer. There's this thing that's true where it is a container now for all of those feelings. And it feels like it holds something of all of those different phases of my life. And when I put it on, it's no longer just the music, you know, it's no longer just like, if I play this for my kids, they would have whatever reaction they were having to it. But they would have none of the like other stuff, you know,
carry all
when I'm listening to this music, I'm not listening to necessarily the notes anymore. I'm now listening to 30 years of lived experience. And I think it's so marvelous that, you know, however we were made, whatever is true about our wiring, that we can just like the music gets in deep. You know, they talk about like people with Alzheimer's, like music is a really important therapy for people with Alzheimer's because it like helps them remember. And I understand that, like it, for whatever reason, has just like clung itself to all of my life experiences. And I'm just so grateful for it. And it has actually like kind of even been a soundtrack to that reconsideration of my childhood and reconsideration of my hometown.
Ah, interesting. I was going to ask if it's bringing back like memories you want to bring back.
Well, it puts them, I think it situates them. I think this is the most important thing. This is actually maybe the last thing I want to say. It situates them on that spectrum. And so I am a strong believer in, if you work through pain, you will on the other end of it always find some redemptive thing that can come out of it. Like the end of the story is never, you know, like your story is never finished. Like your end of the story is never trauma and hurt. It's if you can work through that, on the other side of that is a gift of some kind that you can carry into life to either affect other people or just care for yourself or whatever thing. And I think that I look at all those things that you're talking about that, you know, that could feel sad or could feel hard or could feel, but now they just feel like, well, there's a part of my story and there's a part of how I became who I am and I like who I am. And so, you know, there are things about myself that I will always want to change and will work to change. But when I kind of like take a 40,000 foot view, I like who I am. And so it situates all of those negative things alongside of all of the like joy that's come on the other side of that. And that is for me why this is the best album for going home again, because I get to take all of me with me home. Like I don't just come home and I'm not only just immediately 17. Yeah. I'm not only just immediately back in all of the nonsense and all the terribleness. Like I'm bringing all the good stuff too.
Yeah. I love that. I think that's a beautiful way to think about it. And I mean, good on Billy Corgan for writing all of that into an album. I mean, he really nailed it. He didn't know he was like writing Dave's soul into, you know, playing Dave's soul into a studio in Chicago in 1992 or 93 when this was being recorded. But good job. Good job, Billy.
Good job, Billy. Thanks a lot, man. Thanks a lot, Billy Corgan. Yep. Thanks for listening to all that, Caleb, and for the audience, whoever's still listening.
Of course.
At this point,
I love getting a little piece of Dave's history along with all the music. It's important.
I'm curious, like that experience that I'm having, A, is that something you've experienced as well? And B, what is it about music that does that to us?
Yeah, good question. I mean, it kind of reminds me of that, I think it's a Basquiat, is that I'm saying that right? Quote that music is how we decorate time.
Oh, I like that.
I think a full quote is like, art is how we decorate space and music is how we decorate time. And if you think about how the same music can decorate different parts of time, it's a kind of a fascinating thought experiment to think about, like, does this decoration work at this moment? yes, does it work here? Maybe not. But like sometimes you can find those albums, those artists, that even that style of music sometimes that just works in so many different phases of life for lots of reasons. Either that it's got depth to it that you can kind of mine for different outcomes and different parts of life, or it's got some like nostalgic resonance that brings you right back to the place that you need to be at that moment. I definitely think I have that experience. I think that I'm trying to like digest what you're saying. I almost feel like the music itself to me almost brings me out of the current moment. I'm trying to like process what it does for me. And as you were talking, and it's like,
yeah, say more about that.
I instead of you hearing that and being back in your hometown, or like it seems to me like you hear Siamese Dream and you're pulling out all these memories from it. You're like, like, I'm imagining you almost using that as a collector, and like every time you're listening to it, you're like adding more, like you're adding layers. Like
it's a scrapbook of
right. And I think for me, music tends to do the opposite, where it's like it's above time, and like I have albums that I'm very nostalgic for in terms of things that I listened to as a child, because they got me out of, they were escapism for me. You know what I mean? Like they got me. Similar to what we were talking about resonating with the lyrics, I did that same thing, but it was like escape from my current moment. And so I'm almost like grateful and nostalgia and feel nostalgic for those albums because they were like a tool, or they were like my escape, or like my friend, almost like people that way that I felt seen in a moment where I didn't necessarily feel seen. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Did you feel like when you have an album like that or a song like that, obviously I think that's a gift, you know, a song that can do that for you. Do you, what happens when you switch the space you're in and you listen to that music for you? Like, can you give us an example of a song that might be like that so we can talk about it in specific terms?
Yeah, I mean, just sticking on Muzzle for a second. Is now stuck in my head because we've been talking about it. Great song. You know, like that is a moment where like every time I will listen to that, I will think about being a teenager, but not necessarily in a way where I can't find new resonance with it now, or not necessarily in a way where or not in a way that like makes me more grateful for the experience of being a teenager. You know, like it's just,
yeah,
I don't know how to describe it. It's just like it exists and my experience with it changes depending on who I am, but like it still kind of exists outside of that particular space and time. It's like a moment. I don't know. Am I making any sense?
Yeah, for sure you are. I'm just really curious about like playing that out to its full conclusion and its fullness.
Yeah.
Like, so you put on that record today, Muzzle today. And what are you only experiencing the teenage piece? Are you experiencing anything else?
I think it depends on how tuned into it I am. So like if I'm doing it, you know, while driving, while working, if I'm doing something else, I might have a vague, oh yeah, this is fun to listen to again, kind of nostalgia. If I'm actually listening to it, I do think I could find like deeper resonance, or like, oh, wow, I didn't notice that lyric before. Oh, wow. You know, like it's almost like where you can find things you didn't even find, even though you spent so much time with that record. And those are really special moments when they happen. But I also think it's okay to just like have something that reminds you of a different time in life, and like have it exist for that. And it can be just that. And that's okay.
100%. I mean, I'm every Pearl Jam song ever written is probably like that for me.
Right.
It has not come with me, and so it's kind of stuck in. I mean, I still like them, and so when songs come on, they bring me back to that place. They don't have the same quality of like, you know,
And I mean,
layering on top of it.
My pick for this subject matter is how I thought about it. It was definitely that for me, where it was like, oh, I've got some nostalgia about the time and place of this record, but did it come with me? 100% no.
Tell us about your pick.
This whole genre didn't come with me at all. So I was, you know, the coming home again, I was debating, like, again, is that, I think you went a more, like, this is personal to me about coming home again. And I went more the, like, what does coming home to my, like, kind of small town in Oklahoma, like, what's the universal experience of that? I almost did that, where it was more like coming home to a rural hometown, not just, like, me specifically coming home. Some of my honorable mentions, I think, are more about that. This was more about something that I listened to a lot growing up as a kid, something that's kind of a universal small rural town hometown experience, and that is No Fences by the artist Garth Brooks. I will say that I am not particularly fond of country music as a genre. We can talk more about. I don't listen to basically any country music now. I think that there is a there's a political part of that a little bit. There's also just like a production part of that where it's like, what are we even trying to do here? Like, we're just trying to create the same kind of like same theme, same sound, same. There's been some artists actually that have kind of pushed against that, I think, in recent years that I haven't really engaged that much because I've been so anti this genre. But there's also, for me personally, a lot of, I mean, it's funny because we're talking about the coming home again, like a lot of nostalgia that not in a good way for this, where I'm like, this is all I tried to escape. But I did listen when I was a kid, especially in elementary school, you know, growing up in Oklahoma. The Oklahoma-born Garth Brooks was everywhere and everyone loved him. And I definitely went through a very heavy, me and a few good friends listened to a few of his first albums, but No Fences is probably the one that got the most play. It's got the classic, the song probably that people know the most from Garth Brooks, Friends in Low Places, which is the, you know, if you're going to do a country sing-along, that's the song you're going
to
go for.
And you
for.
Have to do it the way he you does it.
Low voice. Yeah, exactly. But it's also got like some, I mean, again, it's hard to ascribe depth to a country song. Let's be honest. Like, these are simple themes. They're simple stories. Yeah. They're not looking for the kind of artistic lyricism that Billy Corgan is looking for. But, you know, does Thunder Rolls about like somebody cheating, you know, somebody getting cheated on is kind of a, you know, is a, got in some interesting depth with its like a literal thunder, like in the background.
And the thunder rolls. And the thunder rolls.
You know, it's got like the simple themes of like working class family, two of a kind, working on a full house. Got like the God stuff in it with unanswered prayers. I mean, if you could, if you could kind of get a quintessential before country really became the phenomenon that it is today, this was really where it got started, right? Where like this mega artist really hitting gold with these like very simple down home small town themes. And especially if they can be a sing-along about being in a bar, even better.
This record sold 18 million copies.
It was huge. It's still, it I think, his massive. Most, his biggest selling album.
It's also one of the biggest selling country albums of all time, I assume.
I think it's one of the biggest selling albums of all time.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Like, it's nuts. It's hard to understate, like, how big of an artist he was.
I mean, it crossed over. Like, it was not, people who didn't like country music liked Garth Brooks.
Right.
He was the pinnacle of everything.
He hosted Saturday Night Live. Like, what else? I'm sure that don't get me wrong, people are going to write in and tell me about all these other country artists that did it. But I remember when he did that, I was like, what other country artist would like they invite on to do this?
I mean, not many, many musicians got invited on to do this.
100%.
Yeah, he was massive.
Yeah. He was like, this is weird to say, but like in the mid 90s, early 90s, he was like spoken of in the same breath as like Michael Jackson in terms of the like crowds he could draw.
Yeah, that's wild.
Isn't that? Seems,
I mean, it's just not hard to believe. This music is really, really, I mean, it's the height of crafts of his craft, right? Like,
yeah,
I actually don't think you can write a better song in this genre than Friends in Low Places. And the truth is that when I was a kid, I listened to this album and we probably owned this album. I have not listened to this album in 25, 30 years.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
been so long.
Same.
So I couldn't necessarily tell you. I did my cursory listen, my due diligence for the podcast. I did not recognize many of those songs. I'm sure some of those songs are held deeply by people who love country music. And they would tell me that there were many hits. I mean, there had to have been. You don't sell 18 million copies based on one song. There had to have been other.
I mean, that was definitely a big songs. Driver of it. But some of these others were pretty big singles in their own right, for sure.
Did he? It's funny. I don't know much about Garth Brooks because I just country music kind of. It feels like the soundtrack to all the things I didn't like about my hometown.
Yeah,
like
exactly. Like yes,
for all the good things and on in some way. Embracing rock music and alternative rock music for me was a reaction against country music. Like I think for a lot of people, it was a reaction against glam hair metal, and for me, it was a reaction against country music.
100% same.
Yeah. To not live in that space when most of the town seemed to embrace country music. I guess my question is Garth Brooks huge? Like, is he?
Like
did he
still?
Have many other hit records, and does he still sell out arenas? I know so little about Garth Brooks.
That's a good question. I don't, again, save my childhood love of Garth Brooks. I don't have not really followed his career that much.
But I mean, he when the whole like Bud Light fiasco happened earlier this year with all the stuff that happened.
Yeah.
Garth Brooks said he was going to continue to sell Bud Light at a bar he owned or something like yep. that. And that was a big story.
I think he like continued to sell it on his tour. Like he made a point to continue selling it, which classy move by like a
good on your Garth Brooks,
you know, like pretty huge artist. I mean, he had a concert residency. He's still doing stadium tours. He has put out other albums. I don't think he's as big as he was in the 90s. I mean, he had a couple of follow-up albums to this.
I'm noticing, I'm looking at his Wikipedia page like good podcasters do.
Yeah, exactly.
He has 9 albums that sold more than 10 million copies.
I'm telling you, man.
9.
He was huge.
Multiple albums that sold like almost 15 million copies or more. That's why I take, you know, whatever. I don't know anything about Garth Brooks. I'm not the person to like tell you the inside scoop or analyze his music. All I can tell you is I hate country music. I am so genuinely open to all genres. Like just there's not, I hate when people say like, I hate that music, blah, blah, blah. Like when people like react negatively against something, I always think like, hey, just open your heart a little bit and see what you find. Like when I opened my heart to Taylor Swift, I found lots of good things. Like I think Taylor Swift is wonderful. And I had a little bit of a like, oh, Taylor Swift, you know, like because she was a country artist for a long time. And now she's not. And so I like some of her music a little bit more. But you know, Olivia Rodrigo's album a couple of years ago.
Yep.
I was pretty cynical about it. And then I gave it a shot and man, that album is great. And I'm so excited about her new album. So I genuinely want to embrace all musical forms, no matter how outlandishly pop and like I was listening to K-pop earlier this year and being like, hey, I see it. I get it. This is cool. I get why people like this. I don't get country music. I mean, I guess I get it on like some theoretical level, but I just can't. Can't hang.
I just, yeah, I feel the same. But I do want to say, like, country's origins in terms of Patsy Cline,
yes.
even really like Johnny Cash, like some of the more dangerous, like, I'm going to just tell you how it is in my town, kind of like early country was like dangerous and edgy in a way that seems ridiculous now. Like, I think at some point along the way, they thought we were going to cater to the least common denominator in terms of themes of songs over production. And they kind of just got stuck there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it does seem like everything revolves around one type of, and truthfully, that's happening on a lot of different genres. It's not,
yeah,
that's not true for only for country. It just feels like when I inevitably run into the latest country massive hit, it sounds just like all the other ones. And maybe people who don't like rock music or don't like electronic music or don't like, you know, indie folk music, maybe they also feel that way about all of those genres. And I would feel differently if I actually embraced country music. It sure seems like it all sounds the same. I mean, the truth is, like, Christian rock radio that has the same kind of production
100%.
Machine quality. And I was deep in that world. I never have liked that. I've never liked any of that music, but just by way of my profession, was deep in that world for many, many years and never found my way into it. Like, never found a way to like fully embrace it, at least in a recorded setting.
Yeah. We are going to have a separate conversation about growing up in a Southern Baptist culture that thought that Christian rock radio was the only music you were allowed to listen to.
Yeah.
The cool. only non-sinful music. And we're going to have a whole separate therapy session about that. Anyway, but yeah, he had a few really big albums, a few even big singles. I still, I think, nothing, you know, came close to Friends in Low Places, but he was huge. And in my little, you know, hometown where we listened to a lot of country music when I was growing up, he was definitely the pinnacle of it. And eventually he became part of how I rebelled against all of that. And it all kind of got put away. But I do think I've got like a little bit of nostalgia for that music. And the fact that he will now in his, you know, I don't know, stardom twilight, embrace things like the Bud Light thing, you know, just to like make a point.
Sure.
You know, it makes me okay about, you know, hang on to just a little bit of that nostalgia for him.
When you do, I'm assuming you don't put this on very often, but when you do run into it, are you transported right back to a time and a place?
100%. To the point where like when I run into it is absolutely the right way to say that. When I'm at a bar and somehow someone puts on Friends in Low Places, or like you're out and about and it's playing and all of a sudden everyone's got to sing along with it. Because how can you not?
Sure.
I almost think these people don't even know what this is about. I like look around and I'm like, look at all you posers. Like you've never even seen a you know, rodeo. What are you talking about?
Nice. Did I tell you? So I think I've brought this up before, but when we were kids, there was this music festival / like kind of fairway carnival thing, you know, festival that happened every year in Burlington. Most of the acts were country acts, and they always managed to bring like a couple really big country acts. And I've never seen Garth Brooks, but I've seen like almost every other major country acts from like 1987 to like 1998.
Okay, then.
And country music's really fun live. I'm just going to name that out loud. It's really fun live.
All right. So you got something you can hold on to a little bit.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'll just never know any of the songs.
It's probably better that way. I don't feel like there's a lot of depth to those lyrics. And maybe for you and I, even if we go into some of them, we're probably not going to find things we like.
That's probably accurate.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Anything else you want to say about No Fences before we
wrap
up our second?
Definitely not.
Hour long conversation.
Yeah. No, definitely not. Just recognizable country tunes that any small town red blooded American can vibe with.
Do you want to do honorable mentions?
Yeah, I think my honorable mentions were more, like I said, about my coming, like the nostalgia. Like for some reason, I think this is probably because I fell in love with Deftones while I was growing up in Oklahoma. But like Around the Fur will always make me think about driving around my hometown.
Yeah.
You know, Chino yelling shove it about the sun when I'm driving around in a non-air conditioned Ford Thunderbird in 100 degree humid Oklahoma summers, you know, like that is something that I'll always be thinking of. So Around the Fur,
I feel that,
definitely one of my honorable mentions for very personal reasons. I think other than that, I don't know that I had like any specific albums that came to mind about my going home experience, other than just thinking about like, again, like genres. Well, for some reason, The Offspring came to mind for me. I was thinking about like Smash or Ixnay and the Hombre. We had these weird memories of like mowing my lawn with like Ixnay and the Hombre in my CD player, like while I'm again overly hot and like, you know, doing my chores. So maybe Ixnay and the Hombre.
That I used to listen. I had, you know, lawnmowers were loud.
Yep.
And we didn't have noise canceling in our headphones.
Nope.
So the volume that I was listening to Ixnay on the Hombre while I was mowing my lawn.
Yep.
Really dangerous. Really dangerous for ears.
Super loud.
But the fidelity on those headphones, those little cheap Sony,
exactly.
You know, styrofoam headphones.
Don't bounce too much. You don't want to skip.
Hey, man, I skip protection. I was fine. I was made in the shade.
Fancy
I have,
technology.
You know, obviously, I have a bunch of records that this like theme would work for. OK Computer is a record that's come with me through lots of different seasons.
Oh, yes.
I think that the truth is The Siamese Dream does do something emotionally that a lot of these albums don't for me.
Hmm.
Frightened Rabbit is one that has been with me now for many, many, many seasons, but not because that album is like post-college. It doesn't fit this category.
Which album that is specifically?
Midnight Organ Fight and Pedestrian Verse a little bit, but it fits that thing of I've just continued to layer things on top of it and why it's so meaningful to me. OK Computer, Automatic for the People. Really love that record all through high school, all through college, and continue to today. Portishead's Dummy, Melancholy and Infinite Sadness, of course. Can't wait to fully get into that with you at some point. So there's a few of them that are like that for me. As far as albums that evoke the feeling of Burlington, Iowa, I care about this place too much to speak too ill of it. But every country album ever written would certainly suffice.
See, I don't even think of Iowa as like, I mean, it's rural, but it's not like Southern. So like, the fact that country penetrates up there is wild to me, because in my head, that is like a uniquely Southern medium.
My suspicion, I could be wrong about this, but my suspicion is that there is at least pockets in every state or every community.
Oh, yeah,
in the country,
for sure. I think it's much more rural than it is regional. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's right. And that makes sense to me. Like, I understand all of the like logistics of how that happens.
Yeah.
And you can't hang.
And it has no appeal.
I'm guessing, No Fences, not in.
I think it's safe to say this is not a canon entry, Dave.
Yeah. I want to find, like, I'm not going to because who has the time, but I want to find the proper music to, I guess we've already brought In Rainbows in, and that's another, like, top five, top six album for me. But this is, so far on this show, this is the highest ranking album on my list that we have talked about.
I love that we talked about your like top five album and my album I could not give a shit about. It's like,
well, there's a reason that we talked about mine for 45 minutes.
There was like the discrepancy. I don't know if we've ever had a bigger discrepancy between like, I absolutely love this album, it's in my top five albums of all time.
Yeah.
And I don't even listen to the genre this album falls in.
I have a question, though. So Melancholy, I know, would be in your canon and will be properly inducted at some point.
For sure.
Is Siamese Dream in your canon?
I don't think it is in my personal canon, because I haven't spent as much time with Siamese Dream as I spent with Melancholy. So you're making me want to go back and like really revisit it. And I probably will often, because that's basically what I do. I get real time music recommendations on this podcast from you, and I go listen to them.
Like,
so I probably will revisit it. But yeah, definitely doesn't hold the same kind of nostalgia for me as Melancholy.
Yeah. I do want to name, just kind of a behind the scenes for listeners, we have a spreadsheet of you know, potential future topics, things like that. And one of the tabs is reserved albums, albums that I have dibs on or you have dibs on. And this, I think, is the first album that I've actually plucked off of my reserved albums list. So this was one that I was like, nope, you aren't allowed to pick this for something. Only I am allowed to pick this for something. So this means a lot to me. This album means an awful lot to me. Okay, real quick, before we go, what do you listen to?
I mean, there's been an amazing new album released by the Chicago artist No Name that I feel like we got to give a shout out to, because it's definitely been a heavy rotation for me.
Yo, she's a shadow walker, moon stalker, black author, librarian, contrarian, the state say we dare, we say we
controversial not. In some ways, like with her.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, with her addition of Jay Electronica and some of the things he was saying. Anyway, but the album itself, oh man, it's so good. Definitely listening to that. Want to give a shout out to that. I've also been listening to Continue as a Guest by the New Pornographers. Have you heard listen to this one released this year?
Is this
year?
A new one?
Yeah, no, it's the most new.
I think because Dan Behar wasn't on it, I didn't give it much play. Interesting. But, is it good?
I mean, I would put it in the same category for me as the Belle and Sebastian album that came out this year, which is like lighthearted indie rock that is fine to put on in the background.
Okay.
Unoffensive. Fun in some cases.
Yeah.
I really like the single that was released, Pontius Pilate's Home Movies, which is just an amazing title. I really like that song, but the rest of it, I'm kind of like, oh yeah, this is good. You know, it's kind of like, it's in that category for me. But I have been listening to it for that reason. Like, it's just very easy to put on. You know what I mean?
For sure. 100%.
I also want to give a shout out to the fact that there's a new Sufjan album coming out, and the first release single for it is so good.
Incredible.
So good.
Incredible.
The album is called Javelin. It's not out yet, but the song is called So You Are Tired, and it is beautiful. Everyone should go listen to it, but that is definitely an anticipated album for me.
I love it. I am tempted, because this isn't going to air for another week or so, I am tempted to call my shot and say that the Slow Dive album that's coming out on September 1st is my what I'm listening to this week, because I've been listening to the three songs they've released off of it on repeat. Nice. And they are as good as anything Slow Dive has ever done. Slow Dive is one of my favorite bands. I'm so thrilled that this album is seemingly going to be really, really good. But I feel like I shouldn't do it. I should give it a proper listen before I officially recommend it.
I know, right? That's like cursing it.
I know. So instead, I'm gonna drop a single, because we've established that we can just talk about singles in the what we listen to this week.
Yeah.
This new Olivia Rodrigo song, "Bad Idea," right, is so delightful. I cannot get enough. It's so catchy. It's got this fun, like poppy, bouncy quality, like almost like a sleigh bells quality to it. It's so fun, and she's super fun. There's a video for it that is delightful. She's having a lot of fun with her friends, clearly, and it's just really well done. I am really, like, I think she's a really talented artist. Like, I am shocked by how, given her pedigree, given where she came from, I am shocked how much I like Olivia Rodrigo. And again, when we talk about some of these things like Taylor Swift or like Phoebe Bridgers, I am clearly not the target audience. Like, I'm clearly not. Nobody cares that I like Olivia Rodrigo's songs. But man, it's good.
I care, Dave.
It's good.
I care. Don't downplay our friendship as if Olivia Rodrigo is going to make me shame you. Like, only a little bit. No, I actually
Vampire
really like,
also was really good too.
I actually really like Olivia Rodrigo too. I really liked her first album. I thought it was super solid.
It's really good.
I don't know that I've loved the two singles, because honestly, I was like, are these from the first album? Like, they just kind of feel like, oh, we're just, this is just what we do. Do you know what I mean? Like, it just felt like
she's so good at it.
Yeah.
Nobody else is writing songs like this. She's so good at it.
She's good at it. I'm not going to lie, but I was just like, there's not any newness that I'm hearing yet. Maybe in the context of the album, once I hear it, I'll hear that a little bit. But I don't know.
I think Bad Idea Right is a new thing for her.
Okay.
I think Vampire, I agree with you. I think Bad Idea Right is something new.
All right, I'll go back and listen to it again and try to pick up.
Yeah, watch the video. The
video
is super fun.
Yeah. Is she like Taylor Swift in that she's writing all her own stuff? Do you know?
My understanding is yes.
That was what I thought too.
I don't know, you know, I don't know that world of like pop music and feels a little bit hard to get my hands around. Like, it does seem like she's at least writing riffs. She's writing at least the beginnings of songs and maybe bringing in partners to flesh them out with. But that's, you know, I would still attribute the songwriting to her.
Interesting. I mean, if she's able to write at the kind of depth that she writes and it's literally just her and she's able to make it like consistent, I could see it going one of two ways. Like, she could be the next Taylor Swift, which I think she was kind of like ordained to be when that first album came out. Or at least in that, like, you know,
she's like more irreverent. She's more like, she's super sarcastic and funny and like,
oh, 100%.
Like, it's so different than Taylor Swift. It's hard for me to compare them.
In a moment that feels right now. Like, I don't think Taylor Swift really, when she was coming up, felt like she could do that. Do you know what I mean?
Interesting.
But I feel like the way people resonate with youths these days. is very different.
Indeed. All right, man. Let's wrap this up at an hour and 17 minutes. thank you for everybody who's still listening. Of course, hit us up. Let us know what you think, what your best album for Going Home Again is. I'm genuinely interested in having this conversation with anybody who's interested in having it. I would love to hear people's picks for the album that they've taken with them their whole life, and it's just been layered on top of it. So
he will start a podcast with whoever wants to talk about that.
No, I want to have one conversation. If you want to like call and like send me some voice memos, I'll play them on the show.
Oh, yeah, that'd be super kind of fun.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap this up. It's good to see you.
Good to see you.